All right, people, welcome back to Real Tech Talk, episode number 44. Today, I got my man Roman, the owner of Casa. What Roman did that most people didn't is that he understood that layering technology into an existing real estate business was the formula for success, and now he's in 75 properties across the country in every major market. So sit down, pay attention, because technology is trying to figure out how it can impact real estate. And here's one formula that worked, and it has to do with OpCo PropCo. So pay attention, sit down. Episode number 44 coming in hot.
That's why we're here, bro. This is Real Tech Talk. Boom shakalaka. So who the hell are you, bro? You know, what are you into? What do you do? Yo, you can keep it real here. Tell me about these real estate players.
Eric Brody is the managing principal of CEMVC LLC. All opinions expressed by Eric and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of CEMVC LLC. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of CEMVC LLC may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
All right, welcome back, peeps. It's Real Tech Talk, episode number 44. We never thought we would get here, but it keeps growing and growing. And today, we are not bringing you pre-seed and seed. We are bringing someone that I think is at the forefront of the paradigm that is most important in technology and real estate, and that is, and he will explain it, and it's not for me, but sit down, pay attention, because if you're thinking co-living, you're thinking common, you're thinking WeWork, well, there's one company out there that is using technology in a standard industry to change the game, and that's my boy Roman from Casa. Roman, thank you so much for coming on, brother, man.
Thank you for having me, Eric. I love the energy.
I mean, that's what we try to bring here, you know? Otherwise, no one wants to see it if you're sitting there sleeping. So let me give just a quick background of you, because it's fascinating. We keep bringing people in here that I think could have been the massive building developers, contractors, but they chose a different space. So what did you go? Wharton?
I went to Penn undergrad, was studied within Wharton in engineering.
And then Stanford?
Stanford for business school, yeah.
You know what I love about this is that you are forced to sit down with me, and I didn't go to any of those schools, so I love it. So tell me, how did you get into sort of the, when you left these incredible institutions, what were you thinking, and then how we got into real estate and the tech space?
Yeah, I've always been a builder at heart. That's what drives me. I love creating things. I love building things. That's why I like real estate building. The word build is literally in the word.
By the way, I say that slightly differently. Everyone talks about general contracting, and I'm like, contract is in it. You better know the law.
Yeah.
Same thing, you know?
Language was created with kind of like for a reason. There's etymology to all these things. And real estate and technology kind of have a root in building. You write a line of code, and it impacts the way people live, the way people use technology for a very long time. You build a building and it's got this enduring impact. You go back to a city, you want to learn how a city operated 500 years ago.
Or like the layers, right? When we do that section, they talk about like in London, it goes back to like the Roman roads and it gets built up.
Yeah.
100%.
It tells you where people were and how people lived. And that means the buildings we're building today, the way that they operate affects.
So just tell me though, where'd
you
grow up? Where are you from?
I am originally from Ukraine.
Ukraine. Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
So
wait, does that mean your family came in the 80s, 91, or which wave?
So you're right in asking, because I'm technically originally from the Soviet Union, and I lived geographically, my family lived geographically in what is now called Ukraine. We left in 89.
And where did you land?
We went through Italy, where my parents and we were homeless and near a consulate next to the U.S. Consulate outside of Rome in a city called Ladispo. Homeless because so many ex-Soviet refugees were there trying to find a way to the U.S. We got exit visas to Israel, but we're always intent on coming to the U.S. and came to Boston.
Boston, how dare you not come to New York? No problem. I won't hold it against you. But so fascinating. You got the immigrant mentality, right? Which is, I think, certainly an attribute of every founder, which is there's no going back.
Yeah. Right?
Only going forward.
And it's also entrepreneurial, right? My parents took a risk. My dad is a PhD in physics. He had a good job, although not very well-paying job because of the economy in the Soviet Union. In the Soviet Union. And they, you know, uplifted themselves on behalf of us to go to a new country where they didn't know the language, they didn't have a network, and they had to retrain. And so that it's not risk seeking, it's risk adjusted, you know, thinking of what is best for everyone while not being tethered to what you know the tried and true path.
Yeah, no, I just listen, for me it's just fascinating because like you grew up with that, right? So you already are instilled with like, we are going to have an impact on this universe, and that probably focused your energy. I mean, look at the schools that you then went to. But then in school, what did you want to do? Were you hustling as a kid, an entrepreneur, or was it, how did it come about?
Yeah, I learned to code when I was very little. So my parents got me a small computer that had the BASIC programming language, which is literally called BASIC.
That? Commodore 64? What was it?
I forget what the computer, the exact.
Apple IIe? I don't want to date myself.
It was something very big. It was a PC, but it was something very early. It was in 1990.
Gateway.
Maybe it was a gateway. It was 1994, 1995. I learned BASIC and Quick BASIC, really self-taught. I mean, it's called BASIC for a reason. It's a very straightforward programming language. And I liked that I could write something and change the way the computer worked. So I always was into it growing up. I also really liked real estate growing up, but more like the real estate porn, kind of like go to the open house and see how it was, you know, how other people lived.
Well, I was thinking much more. I think that there's like some property thing that's out there, but hey, that's neither here nor there.
I'm talking Zillow. You're talking.
All right, cool. So you had the coding down as a young man. Real estate was like a side hustle. So now you graduate. Now you were at Stanford. So you were on the West Coast, no?
I was on the West Coast. Before, at Penn, I started a company called Bookly.
Okay.
Which I rarely talk about, but it was really fun. And basically, all the things I did entrepreneurially solved my own problem. I did a Palm Pilot PDA arcade website to review games when I was in middle school. In college, I started a company that basically saved money for students who are buying textbooks. It was like kayak.com for textbooks. Like that.
Oh, so you had a marketplace for used textbooks that they could then purchase at a certain value?
We were, let's say you needed to buy your accounting book. The website had the syllabus for your school. You would type in accounting 101. It said what accounting book you needed. And then it would search across 40 or so different websites to either buy, rent, or buy used that book. And then we would take a cut of every sale.
Did Amazon buy you?
We just ran it profitably for a decade. My brother and I did this. Wow. My brother is much smarter than I. He's a computer engineer.
I don't even want to talk to him then. Forget it. This is enough.
He automates the warehouses at Amazon and is like doing incredible things.
Wow. So then what did you do with that business?
That business we ran profitably for a while. Both my brother and I knew we weren't passionate about that sector.
Yeah, selling books. But it was making money.
It was making money, and ebooks were coming. And so it just felt like secularly a sector in decline. But it was exciting to build something, see people use it, and get feedback from students who were otherwise spending, you know, 20% of their dollars for textbooks when they're for school. That's for state schools where you're spending quite a bit.
I remember. We used to, allegedly, we used to when people moved out, take their textbooks and resell them. But that's an alleged happened. I don't know if it really did. Yeah. So then you went to Stanford. Just why? Why did you then head out west?
I didn't go straight to Stanford. I went into real estate. I had done this internship, which combined technology and real estate, which is what I was studying in my summer of 2009, when the world was ending, and I worked in CMBS quantitative trading at Citigroup. Which was a...
So post-college, you were working?
Post-college, I was working. I worked in private equity real estate.
Okay. Well, so there you also got into sort of the credit markets, how capital is moving, how it likes to look at real estate. I mean, that's a great angle as well.
100%. Well, it was like the epicenter of the crisis in 2009, looking at CMBS securities, building models in C that predicted the default likelihood of different tranches in those.
And oh, really?
That's
so
what we were doing.
You were creating, you were programming an algorithm that was taking in that variability as to what perceived could like fail at any minute?
I was an intern. I was trying to understand.
I feel like this is The Big Short. And
I was trying to spell CMBS.
Yeah.
and we were coding. But it was really fascinating and connected to real estate, but very far removed from real estate. I was thinking, hey, we're using... the interest rate, the 10-year treasury plus our prediction for employment to predict defaults.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not looking at the actual underlying assets as
closely. Or the underlying borrower.
Or the underlying borrowers as closely. And so that led me to realize I didn't want to write code, though I liked the impact of code being written. I didn't want to, be so high level at the CMBS level. I wanted to be at the real estate level. So I went to Walton Street Capital, which is a private equity fund in Chicago. And then I joined KKR 2 years later.
Which is a massive fund.
Massive fund. But they were actually, it was a startup within a institution. Mm-hmm. I joined them when they were just building out their real estate effort. I think when I joined, I was the sixth person on the team. Now they have something like 140 and $66 billion under management just in real estate. But at the time, it was nothing.
I don't want to skate over something. I think that's really fascinating, which is you understood how to code. You don't want to code, but you saw like from an entrepreneurial perspective, you know, we're finding that real estate doesn't know how to communicate with technology. So they have something like a product manager, right, who's supposed to like sort of resolve that. You knew that. You knew how to communicate with an engineer what you need without actually having to do the code. I think that that's hyper valuable.
I respect those who code. I like it, but it's not my calling. It's not where I'm best. Similarly, I like construction workers, and not that those are like identical, but they are the same idea of building a building. But
I don't want to be the carpenter.
I don't want to be the carpenter, nor would I be the best carpenter. There are amazing people who do that, but I like development. Mm-hmm. I really like, and so I like the impact that development can have in real estate. I like the impact that a computer program, a development.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So you knew the development space. You understood the technology space. And then I think something that I've been missing that I now understand was the credit space or just the capital space, how capital looks at real estate in order at least to define, to raise money to do anything.
That's right.
Right? So you had those like sort of three pillars, which probably led you now, unless there's a space in between after selling the book.
Bookley.
Yeah. Then working. Then you left. Is that like when you sort of departed?
I started noticing at KKR. We had an amazing team. I learned a ton from them. Still do. And what I focused on, it was mainly hospitality and apartment investing. And what was interesting is more and more we're buying or building or doing adaptive reuse projects on the hospitality side for properties that were great, but not ones that I felt like my generation and I was interested in staying in. They felt like more an echo of the past than a prequel for the future.
And what year was this?
This was 2012, 13, 14.
So smartphones out, you're starting to see the way in which they're interfacing with real estate, right? I mean, you're seeing the way that you live.
Yeah, and I'm seeing Airbnb rise, and Airbnb is a great solution for many, but it's often unreliable. You get an amazing stay in some of your trips where the host is really on it.
Right, because Airbnb is a platform sitting on individual assets, their assets. There's no congruency of sort of service. It's just anyone who has it.
That's right. And it's individual people who are I think they have 5 million or so individual hosts. And sometimes you'll have somebody who's great, and sometimes you'll have someone who's doing a podcast or in a meeting and can't answer your call when you have a plumbing emergency.
Correct.
And so for many trip purposes, let's say you're with your family or you're traveling for work, you just can't take that risk.
Yeah.
And so that was, Airbnb was a different way to stay, more digitally friendly on your phone, more.
Right, you're getting text messages, you know, at least communicating in a slightly more efficiency with a smartphone.
And the properties are more in the neighborhood too. And it feels different. It feels good, but you can't take the risk on it. It's missing something. It's missing reliability. So that's, I saw that on the consumer side. The real insight though is on what the ownership side and what we were struggling with as investors, and that was the rising cost of owning and operating both apartments and hotels. Labor costs were going up. They still are. Wall Street Journal,
insurance,
taxes. Today, debt service. For a while, we got a debt service holiday for a decade with low interest rates, but they're normalizing to where they were for the previous 30 years today. And so owners are in need of you ask always, is this a medicine or a vitamin? And there is a problem right now around the cost of operating hospitality properties that owners, it's kind of intractable. And that was what really led to
starting. Unions, right? There's also union increases costs.
That's kind of under the umbrella of labor, whether it's union or non-union.
Gotcha.
Labor, there's a shortage of labor, which causes it to be very difficult to operate properties.
So does that then the germination of the company that we're here to discuss today?
that is the, those were kind of like the trends I was seeing, the consumer trend around differences in travel, and then the trend in
so cost. I'd love to start to talk about that, because I feel like there's a crisis in the real estate and tech space that needs to be addressed. And I think that you saw it, and that's really a visionary tactic, because it's not the sales process of the rest of technology. Technology came to real estate and said, we are going to disrupt what you do. If you built, now some robot's going to come in to build. And they were selling these goods, and they were selling it to real estate guys who are very Machiavellian, who are like, show me how it makes more money. But people were investing into some of them. And I guess because of the hype, we're making money on the alternative markets. But then 2023 hits and investment into real estate and technology is down 80%. Valuations are down 77%. Like, we got rocked, right? So then I looked out there and I started to try to talk to companies that understood that they were really a real estate company with a layer of technology giving an advantage.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I spoke to you, that was exactly what you were doing, right? If someone says to you, now I want you to explain in one sentence what's CASA, and you had it for me. So tell me in one sentence, what's CASA?
We are, for the owner, a property manager for hospitality and hospitality adjacent properties that delivers far more profitability than the alternative.
And much lower cost, right?
At much lower cost,
right?
Yeah.
So it's a real estate asset,
yeah,
right? And you're like, you plug in CASA to this real estate asset, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, the way that, one of the ways I haven't shared live or with others, but one of the ways to think about it is property management is a very hard business, especially hotel property management. You have nightly people who need to stay in your units. You need to have housekeeping. People expect really fast resolution to issues. If Wi-Fi is down, like, they're staying there for a day. They need it to be, if it's not solved, they'll leave you a bad review.
And the best in the world have somehow solved that to such a place where you're like, wow, it works seamlessly.
It works,
right?
Seamless, but you know what? They're like, think of that image of a duck that's moving across the lake and it looks placid, but it's really furiously paddling underneath the surface.
Yes.
Traditional hospitality management companies are that duck, and they're paddling like crazy. What we've built at CASA, this simple image, is we're that duck, but we have a motor.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've used technology to make that duck go much faster, and it actually isn't paddling quite as furiously because it's electric. And what that actually translates to, that's a nice image, is we've automated a lot of hospitality management. We've eliminated some.
So are you a hospitality management company?
We are a hospitality management company with a brand. So consumers.
No, 100%.
But we are a hospitality management company.
And you don't own the assets.
We can partner with the owners of the assets pretty deeply. So we've sometimes and often been helpful at the underwriting stage. We have some programmatic PropCo partnerships. We have a partnership.
So you're the OpCo, PropCo, like, poster child of success.
Yeah.
Our boy Brad Hargraves in Substack loves to talk about that. And you are like the actual company that's executing that. And if people don't understand, it's like, you structure the property under a specific LLC, which then creates a management agreement with you. It just may be that you helped raise the capital or you have a piece of that stack.
Yeah, that's right. Look, in PropCo, OpCo, there's nothing new under the sun really in real estate. This has been a structure that's been around for 100, maybe not 100 years, but 50 years, where the manager, the owner of the real estate needs somebody who has a distinctive approach to manage those properties.
Mm-hmm.
And we at our core can make the properties, whether they're apartment buildings or hotels, run more profitably.
So let's talk about it. Let's break it down. So first, I think that everyone should know CASA's in 75 buildings across the country. Am I right?
That's right.
So this is big time. So what he's saying, you might be like, oh, I don't know if that's working. No, he's killing it. It's working. He is a management company restructuring OpCo, PropCo throughout this country. I'm talking Miami, NY, right? Chicago, West Coast. It's around this country.
We are in quite a few cities. Yeah, LA, Austin, Denver, Nashville, all the markets you said, New York City, et cetera.
And then what's the size? You're at Series C right now? Like, you are not pre-seed. We are not here to fund you. We are here to talk about a successful entity as sort of a North Star of where you can go.
We announced our Series C in October. Yeah, we've raised it during a pretty difficult time
in
the sector.
Right? So, like,
yeah.
It's like, not only were the headwinds against you, it did work. Like, so we have, like, a really, like, you know, I don't want to say superstar in the space, but like, it's working. We're making money. We raise a lot of money, right? So like, people need to pay attention that Roman, you know, coming in from the former USSR, came here and created something like super fucking special. And I'm excited, and you could talk about it because you're opening a property, and I get, and it's in a market that I need to go to, so I can like experiment with specifically this experience.
100%. We're proud to be trusted by some of the largest owners and managers of real estate. So the property you're referring to in Miami is owned by Amley Residential, which is owned by Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, so like, that's the other thing people need to understand. Like, Casa's partnering with those funds that own the units. Like, they're seeing that value, and he's executing and showing them more money. Like, it's working.
Yeah, that's right. Look, we opened a property in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. It's called The Lantern. It's on Allen and Delancey. It's a great little 20-room property. We have improved the margin of that property before and after, from like something like the best year ever was like 40% at the gross operating profit level. Right now we're operating at closer to 70% on a trailing 12 basis. We're making the owners a lot more money, and that is the secret
sauce. Look, that's the end result. But let's talk about it from the consumer. So, what is my experience like? So it's not, I'm assuming, and you tell me, it's not full service, right? It's not humans everywhere. We're creating efficiency. Like we said, we needed that efficiency. What's my experience like?
Yeah, Danny, we respect a lot of the builders before us in hospitality. Danny Meyer came on our all hands and talked about how he thought about technology within hospitality. He's kind of the godfather of hospitality. Everyone at Casa reads his book, Setting the Table. And he said something that stuck with us, which is high tech does not mean low service. And that's how we think about it too. So it is high.
And if you don't know Danny Meyer, you're talking about like one of the prominent restaurateurs for the young people out there. He's what's the name of the burger? What is it?
Shake Shack, 11 Madison Park. He's got Unique
Well, that's
Cafe.
For me and you, but you know, Utes out there.
I'm living in a garage. We're a scrappy building. High tech doesn't mean low service is something we really live by. What it means, what does high tech mean? It means we remove the friction that otherwise is kind of annoying and not value add in a hospitality context. You walk into a hotel and you see a line at the front desk.
Yeah.
And you're like, why do I have to show, is this the DMV? Like, it feels like the DMV where you have to check in.
Of course.
We allow you to bypass the front desk. You get a code on your phone that is texted to you. There's also something called a virtual front desk, which guides you from your Uber or car to the inside of your Casa unit in a few easy steps. There's a visual that shows you kind of the step-by-step kind of picture.
So
of what
efficiency
to do.
And check-in, you're in, boom, you're right into the room. We all know everything is IoT, so I guess a lot of IoT in the properties.
Yep.
You know, certainly a Wi-Fi mesh network, an application to your phone, some text, right? So now you're in the space and it was all through your phone, right? So now what about if there's a problem, like you said, or what about housekeeping? How does that operate? Because you still need a human for that.
Yeah, so housekeeping, we've built sort of like the Uber for housekeeping. A lot of what we do, by the way, and what we've built is below the surface of the iceberg. It's what helps power the operations, that motor on the duck.
Mm-hmm.
Housekeeping is one of multiple elements
of it.
Right,
there's a bunch of modules.
And so the housekeeping element, there's a scheduling element, there's a workflow element of kind of actually doing the clean, and then there's a feedback loop element. Similar to you order an Uber, then you get the Uber goes to the destination, and then there's a feedback, you rate the Uber. Scheduling helps make sure that we're prioritizing early check-ins and like know the load capacity of our housekeeping partners. The workflow is a step-by-step checklist that they go through, which we can change up, and it kind of asks for photos before and after so that we can do some quality assurance across the country very efficiently. And then the feedback loop is when you check in, you will find that after the lock is unlocked, we know you've checked in, we'll text you asking how things are going. You'll say, hey, the room was sparkling clean, or maybe there was an issue, and we will translate that to a score for the housekeeper. But we also, in the virtual front desk, just ask you for a 0 to 5 score if you prefer to do it that way.
So you're getting feedback, which is obviously the very definition of sort of creating a brand, right? Is that if you can sort of create, you know, a equality of experience throughout, right? So as long as you're getting that feedback, are you doing it autonomously too? Do you have sensors just to know where people are moving or operating?
So we do have IoT in the properties, but it's focused on trust and safety. Often we have a few different form factors of how we deploy our operating system for delivering more profitability to hospitality properties. One of them is apartment buildings. One of them is full building hotels. In the full building hotels, we're the whole building. In apartment buildings, we're a floor or multiple floors. And in those buildings, especially, the owners care about, you know, trust and safety. Are the folks who are in a CASA unit going to cause a problem for the rest of the building? We have a trust and safety suite, and one of the elements of that suite is the IoT in the units. So we have a cigarette and marijuana sensor in the units. We have a decibel meter in the units. We have a Wi-Fi sensor to see how many devices are connected, and a motion sensor. And so we use that more for defense. We want to ensure that the sanctity of the community for the CASA guests and for the rest of the building is maintained. And so it's to prevent parties. We do a lot more than that.
No, that's cool. So obviously the experience is now automated on the getting in. You're getting all the services that you normally would in a hotel. It's just working through an application first or through your phone.
That's right.
And that's why, you know, you're reducing the overall costs as a result, and it's working, right? I have a question, is it predicated on the zoning though? Does that limit you a bit? Like that, you know, because in New York, you would need to be in sort of a C district, and you're kind of finding random properties. It's not like New York City's like, yeah, you know, you should be everywhere. You know, we have such multifamily restrictions, but it's not like that everywhere. But I think Miami is like, so what are you finding? Is there a zoning restriction for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. And it kind of goes back to the point around real estate. The difficulty building a real estate technology company. What we have built, the pure play operating system to deliver more profitability, that can apply to any zoning. But then you have all these other questions you have to answer that are completely independent of a superior product or an approach to doing something. Zoning is one of those. Lenders are another. REIT rules are another. You know, you can go down the list of these.
Oh, so, that's interesting. Lenders. So the lenders are like concerned, right? Because like, we don't get it. It's not a food group that they understand.
Lenders are initially just unsure, sometimes concerned, but once they learn more, we have a very robust playbook to talk to.
No, obviously,
lenders.
You have 75 properties. You've solved the fucking problem.
But it's friction, and it's a step by step. You build. We become the trusted provider. We become the industry standard, but it's kind of it used to be a very big problem.
Are they financing more than they believe in your NOI, or are they like, we're going to do a regular NOI and you're just going to have more cash flow to the principal?
So right now it can be both, but it's more the regular NOI. They look at it as, hey, I have better downside protection. Previously, my building could just do apartments.
Yeah, now, no, you've solved for it. I think it's fascinating. I mean, it was Airbnbs or these co-living's biggest issue is you're just not getting the exit based on the NOI you've created, and you're not getting the financing based on that either.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so it's unique to co-living because you don't have an alternative as easily, you know, you can't as easily convert it back to something else versus for us, you can always go back to apartments in your worst case, right. But you can run it as a short-term rental in your base case. Your question on zoning, the answer is yes, we need to operate in hospitality zones, we need to get a hotel license, and we have a playbook to work through that. But you know, in the property we're opening in Wynwood, Miami, that we hope you stay with us in
the penthouse. Yeah,
of course, there's a great rooftop pool. It's really a really special property.
I can't wait.
Although we love all of our properties.
Of course.
That one has a hotel license. And so do our other properties, or the right license in a given city.
So I get it. And it's amazing and it's working, and everyone that's listening should take a look. And really, you know, one of the things that I thought was fascinating about bringing you on was you were like, no, this is a real estate play that you then add in these efficiencies, and that's why it's working. And I think that many technologists need to understand that. It's like this idea of disruption is gone, but it's like take that real estate asset, make it a little bit better. And it's not only us. It's like Tesla on cars, a little percentage here, 2% there, and look at the business that you've created, right?
And it adds up. It's 50, you know, you do a few percent on every category of a P&L, and now you're 50% more NOI.
And especially since, you know, NOI to cap rate is inversely proportioned. It's a 10, 15x, you know, greater valuations, right?
Yep.
So what's the future of CASA? Like, where do you see it going? And I don't mean it needs to be like in 100 years. What about in the next year or two? Like, what's your biggest like focus right now?
We have a very simple approach. We know what our value proposition is to owners, which is to make them more NOI in their properties. So we have one company-wide goal that we'll have this year. And then also, if you ask me, in 10 years and in 20 years, and that's improve the operating profit to our partners, then we prioritize, everyone's incentivized around it. We prioritize initiatives around it. The exciting ones right now, there's one around revenue management that is very technical. So probably not for this conversation, mm-hmm. but one around AI that is very exciting and very specific to our use case, where if you text us or ask us a question when you're on site, you will AI is helping to categorize your question. It's helping to prioritize it. If it's a lockout, AI is helping to say, hey, this is a question that needs to go as the top priority. If it's something less urgent, we'll lower in the queue. It's Copilot for our team.
And then low-level problems it probably can respond to, no?
And right now, we're seeing that certain categories, we have a Copilot response that AI is recommending to our customer service team. And they're just,
I got you.
And they're using it. But then we saw in by certain categories, like let's say, what are the amenities in the property? It's like a 98% acceptance rate. Yeah, and so they're just, that's going directly to the guest.
It's really cool how you speak because, you know, you're talking about the Copilot ideology. And we were at, in Future City, I was in the Bahamas, and we were with a Harvard professor who's saying the same thing. He's like, AI is there, but it's a Copilot right now. We can't have it in control. So like, that's making more efficiency to that employee that needs to respond. They're seeing like the appropriate answers, but they still right now need to be the one. Like it's not there yet. So like Copilot is like incredible. You're like at the forefront of incorporating AI in the appropriate manner into your assets.
That's right. And we have found that in certain categories, it's good enough where it can go direct to guests, but we're very careful in measuring it first and then ensuring and only then automating those categories. So if your question comes in, we've categorized it as an amenity question using AI to categorize it. We've seen in the past 4 months that amenity questions get answered without issue 98% of the time. Now it just goes, okay, this is an amenity question. I'm just going to send this directly rather than wait for our team to approve it. So that's how
we're doing. And obviously the insights now you're generating and creating transparency with your owners is probably, you know, phenomenal, right? So they must be super impressed.
Hey, 30% of your questions are about category A, another percent are about category B. If we change this to the building.
The speed we responded, what they then said afterwards, it's like you can grade yourself. So they know that like, there's a reason that they partnered with you, right? Yeah. Instead of being like, I walked it and there was dirt. And you're like, well, actually, I know a lot about why, right?
That's right. And what I'm very excited about is not just using AI to play defense, be a little bit more efficient, to be faster, but also to do something that was very hard and costly to do before, which is personalize your stay. Let's say you stay with us 10 times. Each time you ask about the nearest coffee shop or a specific type of coffee you like. Well, we can go back into your previous history. The AI will summarize, this is what Eric likes. And next time you stay with us, there'll be that brand of coffee in the unit. And that costs us very little. That's the kind of service that Aman and Four Seasons deliver on, but they have, you know, 40-to-1 guest labor to guest ratio, and we can do that much more efficiently.
And you know, and I know, like that's the shit right there. That's everything, you know. Like if you went into this space and they're like, "Hey, here's some stickers for your kids" or something like that, you're like, "Oh my god, they really thought about me." And you're like, "No, it's just actually we can get that data sort of quickly and use it to our advantage, and it's not overly priced or costly."
Yeah, you said, look, part of building a brand is being reliable. Part of it is a feeling that you create for people, and
always.
If they feel like we want them to feel, one of our company values is to be Hall of Fame hosts to our guests, to our partners, to each other. If you feel like we weren't just your host, but we should be retired in the, you know, Hall of Fame of hosting because we, you know, remembered that your kids love Snickers bars. I mean, how could you stay anywhere else? That's a connection that we hope creates loyalty. And so I think it's very powerful.
Yeah, listen, I'm super excited for your future. That's why I had you on. I feel like the audience really needs to see where a mature can company go that's still creative, ran by someone who's super young, super intelligent, and sort of looked at three different things and three different pillars as to create this success and hit up a sort of laggard industry and then created it to now a 75 property success and probably only more in the future.
We're at day zero. I appreciate your saying we're a success. We certainly are the industry standard today, but we have many more properties that aren't operated by Casa than are. And so if every year we're improving that value proposition, delivering great, on our promises to our owner partners that trust us across some of the larger institutions like Starwood and TPG. And
they're the ones watching, honestly. They communicate with me all the time that they're taking a look. So I hope they pay attention and, you know, reach out to you. And then finally, I just want to tell you, I'm impressed that for the first time, we are branded here, people. We got water bottles. We got hats. And by the way, you gave me a hat. It's dope. You did good, bro. This is like a legit hat.
I got a backpack here. If I took off my, you know,
I have the tat on the stomach. So
live, breathe. If you're building a company from scratch, you got to do it all the way. Everything in the life's got to be oriented around increasing the odds of success. We've been through COVID and SVB went almost under last year. The interest rate world change in real estate. You got the multifamily world changing on us with 20% rent growth. you got to be all in. And so that's just
word up. And I think that's a great way to end. I really appreciate you coming on. And honestly, I'm just happy that I got to drag you down here for some time, some of your time.
I appreciate you having me.
All right, brother. Wow, what an incredible episode. You know, normally I sit here and it's pre-seed and seed, and I tell you if I think that this is either going to be a medicine or was this just a vitamin. This is obviously a medicine. The biggest players at the top of the comet are partnering with this guy. And what did he do? He's taking a laggard industry, hospitality with high overhead. He's layering in certain workflows for some efficiencies, and boom, he's increasing the bottom line and it's working. He's expanding like hotcakes. He's opening up in Miami right now. He already has a property there and he's opening up his second one. So just for this episode, this was about showing you those companies that have matured, that are winning in this space regardless of coronavirus, regardless that investment is down 80% into the space, because he was able to show one thing, and that's true, and that is increased NOI. He understood what real estate was about. He understood what capital markets are looking for. And then he understood how technology can increase that. That is my man, Robin, and that's at Casa. Come check it out. Peace.